CliffCentral.com.
Judith Sepuma is the name that comes to mind when you think of South African jazz and Afropop. She is incredible. I have seen her perform many times. It's the first time, though, we've actually had a proper conversation in the studio. Unbelievable. How come it's taken so long? Is it your fault or mine, Judith Sepuma? It is just after 8 o'clock. Let's find out from our guest. She's right here. Wow. Look at you. I believe you're up at every morning at 5?
Oh, my God. Yes. I'm really so excited, Cliff.
Why?
I'm just excited to be here. You know, I love radio. I love talking. And I love talking to good people.
Wow. Look at you.
Yeah.
Making a really good first impression. Mubs, usually it's me who's excited, not the guests.
This is true.
But I am excited to see you because you are really a national treasure in many ways.
Thank you. I
love everything that you've done in your career. Your work is just extraordinary. Your voice is just extraordinary. And it seems to me that you're one of those people, and this is a rare thing in South Africa, that everybody says nice things about.
That's true. That humbles me so much. It makes me want to continue doing what I'm doing. It makes me want to, you know, just remain humble.
But you seem to have everything together. Like you've got it all under control. How do you do that? You give the impression that everything is cool. You know exactly what you're up to.
I think it's more than it seems. It actually most of the time is what it is because I've taken my career as a very serious thing. It's not a hobby. From the minute I went to varsity, I decided that this is what I wanted to be and this is where I wanted to be. This is how I want people to see me and this is how I want to feel, you know, with what I do. Like even 10 years from then, I remember when I was asked by Sony before, you know, what do you want? What kind of music do you want? I could not tell them even the style, but I wanted the music, a style, or rather, I wanted a journey that would last a long time, you know, a matured kind of sound, a sound that people can relate to, and a sound that would reflect really who I am. And even if it meant that I am going to discover me through that music, I wanted that to happen.
So you almost went in and said, we're going to figure this out on the way.
Exactly.
You didn't really have a plan, a roadmap beforehand.
No.
That's amazing because it seems to me like your career has been very, very well thought through. So you're telling me that it's all kind of happened by sheer luck and the grace of God. I mean, notwithstanding your awesome talent.
Yeah.
But that the actual path is not one that you foresaw.
No, because, you know, at the time in Cape Town, I was studying, it was jazz. Like, I'm talking somewhere there's music. You know, that's what it was. And nothing funky, nothing until when I started singing in clubs. And I was doing rock. I was doing R&B. I was doing African songs. I was doing all the... And then, on the other hand, I was studying... I was being trained classically. So imagine that I was singing opera, studying jazz, doing big band shows, and then I had this band where we had to go entertain people until 2 a.m. almost every single day of the week. You know, so that was, I did not know what to do. So when we went into the studio, I just wanted to sing my heart. And the songs that came were songs that were, I think they just made me discover who I was. Because when you're singing all those styles and studying that and, you know, there's a confusion. You
rounds
don't even
you
know.
Off, though.
But it does. It gives you such amazing discipline, which is what happened to
you
me.
You know, isn't that amazing? Because I've spoken to people before who've said to me, oh, they only like a certain kind of music. And I always think it's a little bit sad.
Yeah, it is.
Because if you really love music, you love all music.
Broad.
Even the stuff you don't understand, maybe. I mean, like jazz is something I still have to learn to appreciate.
Yeah.
I mean, I have got one or two favorites. You know, there's some Miles Davis and there's some Grover Washington Jr. And that kind of thing that I'm getting into. And your stuff. But jazz is the one area I know I need some development.
Yeah.
But I always think, if you can hear a good melody.
Oh, man.
Isn't that the most special thing about music? It doesn't matter whether it's rock or it's dance or it's hip hop or it's jazz.
Yeah. If it can get me moving, I love it. And I always think it is also still sad for singers. who actually can sing only one style of music.
Mm.
I think that's
they
very
must
sad.
They bored, right?
They must be bored. And you know what? Even when creating music, you end up creating the sameness. Or you're going to try and take something that is not you and try to make it you. Whereas, you know, if you were listening, you see, listening will educate you so much. And especially if you're going to come out of your comfort zone, which is something that I still do until today.
So what are we listening to right now?
What are you listening to?
Yeah.
To all my albums, honestly. Why? Because I've got a show coming up. So this is what I do all the time.
This is your prep.
This is my prep. So I listen and I check, okay, what do people like? What have they not heard? And how do I change? Because I don't want my shows to be the same. People who have come to my shows, they tell you that if we take them on a journey, you know, we go back, we do a lot of things in our shows, and I make sure that they're different from the way we look to the way we sound.
And if you aren't listening to your stuff, preparation for a new tour or a new album, what are you doing then? What do you listen to?
I listen to gospel, a lot of gospel, because I've discovered, I think 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that, you know, in gospel as a singer, you can actually learn a lot. And I'm talking, don't listen to your local gospel. Listen to gospel across the board. Listen to gospel because gospel is different on different levels and people sing it differently. But if you check in New Orleans a long time ago, I remember when we started doing history of jazz, a lot of music came from slavery.
Yeah.
You know, it came from, you know, the days where on our moms, you know, long time ago, when they would be in that field, you know, plowing, they'd be singing some kind of scales, whether it's this, it sounded like Indian scales or something scales, but everything was really more related to gospel. So we don't actually know that, but it's gospel. It's, and especially when you're listening to Indian music has got amazing scales that singers can actually learn from to make your music more current, to make it make sense and for you to grow vocally. One thing that singers don't understand is that your voice, when you turn 50, if you don't do something to it now and nurture it, you're going to lose it. That is just, you know, something that happens to most of us.
You could hear it. I mean, there are a couple of artists that immediately spring to mind, like Nina Simone.
Yeah.
You know, after she turned sort of 45.
And that's a best example.
Maybe even earlier for her because it became very... And even Dionne Warwick.
Even Dionne Warwick.
I mean, she used to have this little bird voice, you know. Moment I wake up.
Yeah, you know, now they can't go there.
That's the moment I wake up.
But you lose your octave.
It's still beautiful. It's just different, right? The range
is
reduced, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But you're nowhere near 50, so what do you have to worry about?
That's why I'm training. That's why I'm training my voice. I think it's important to go visit that vocal teacher. It's really important.
Something I've always wanted to ask you. You grew up and you were born in Limpopo.
Yes.
And then you end up finding yourself in Cape Town studying jazz. Yes. It seems to me like you traveled the furthest possible distance you could.
Oh, yeah.
And you did something that was so different to the kind of music that you might have grown up with.
Yeah.
Explain that to me. That's a big culture shock for a young girl from Limpopo, right?
I cried.
You must have cried a lot.
Oh, my God. I cried. I remember coming out of a taxi. Okay, firstly, let me tell you why. Because when I was I came back from singing with – I was staying with Brenda Fassie for about a month. And when I came back –
You lived in her house.
I lived in her house. She actually sent a driver to come pick me up. Listen, I'm hip.
Okay.
I'm hip
Just hold. We'll get to this in a second. So – Brenda Fassie says to you, come and live with me and you can observe and you can see what we do in this business.
Yes.
And you can learn to be a real good singer.
Yes.
But Brenda Fassie, I'm imagining this is in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was at the height of her fame.
Yes.
She was on 1,000 different uppers and downers.
Oh, yes.
So she was cray cray. This woman must have been bouncing off the wall.
She was mad.
What was it like living with this?
It was crazy. I ran back home. Okay, I'll tell you a quick short story.
Give me some stories.
Quick story. So I live with Brenda. I'm in Joburg. I'm studying music. Great. Okay, this is now after Brenda. Oh, my gosh. How do I begin this? So anyway, blah, 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 blah. So I stayed with Brenda Fassie, right? That entire month was the month was a break or make point for my career and for me personally.
Okay.
Because when living with her, I had to work with her. I had to make money for the first time in my life, earn something like 1,000 rands, which at the time was massive. You know, it was huge.
And did you earn this 1,000 rand and you got to keep it all, or did you have to pay some of it into Brenda's household?
I had to keep it.
You had to keep it.
I had
so
to
she
keep
wanted
it, yeah.
you to work on your own.
She
do
wanted,
your thing.
Yeah. And Chico came. They were going to write me a song. I don't even know if Chico remembers me, but you know, they were going to write me a song and we were going to do my album. It was quite a big
How
thing.
How did Brenda find you?
I went to her. I ran away from home at 13. Guys, don't run away from home. It's not good. So I ran away from home.
Because you'll end up
13.
Living with someone like Brenda Fassie, the biggest rock star in Africa.
I actually saw, it was a festival. You know, they used to have Lion Laga Road shows. So they were standing. I saw her over the fence. There were security guards everywhere. And yeah. I sneaked out. I was so tiny that I went under the fence. And I went to her sitting in her combi and I said to her, listen, can I just sing? I was crying, actually. I said, I just want to sing for you one song. And she said, okay, sing. And I sang. I said, the minute I said, Ellie on Monday morning, she stopped and she screamed. She said, oh my God. She jumped out of her car. She called everybody, Jimmy Glue, all those
oh,
big
wow.
guys.
Oh my God.
And she said, come, you gotta hear this girl. They took me into a room and they made me sing and they backed me up. Ooh, it was the most amazing time of my life at 13. And there's Judith now. Riots. And then that night, she actually said to me, you gotta come sing with me. Do you know which one of my songs do you know? I said, well, you pick.
Because you knew all of them.
I knew every song. And so she chose Too Late for Mama, which was the final song of the set.
Man.
And I went up there, 12,000 people. It was madness. I sang my lungs out. I couldn't dance to save my life. And I was like a tomboy, you know. I was wearing a cap. I was wearing these jeans and sneakers and a t-shirt.
Does anyone have a recording of that?
I want that recording.
If anybody has one, I mean, they've got to send that to you.
Yeah.
That is a piece of history.
I want that recording. Yes. I don't even know they were recording that day, but I sang and people knew who I was. I became so famous that day. Then a month later, I had to go back to school. And then a month later, they came to fetch me. I went to go stay with her. And then I went back because then I was starting to be asked to do stuff that I was not supposed to do as a child.
Yeah.
And I knew that from being raised by my mom, you know, because my mom was hard. My mom.
What stuff? They wanted you to sing inappropriate songs, or they wanted you to, you know. Give
well,
sexual favors to some of the dodgiest men in town. I mean, what was going on?
No, one of those happened and I kind of like ran away. Actually, I cried. And the following day, you know, when somebody grabs your breasts and they're trying
right.
to, yeah, so I left. Mm. And then after that, before that though, I was being asked to roll a weed.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And it had to be in a certain way. You know, if it wasn't, there was, you know, she would be upset. And I said, you know,
you would think that these men knew how to behave themselves.
I promise you.
Know?
And I Jesus. Asked if I could go home. Actually, I woke up the morning and I begged and I cried. My mom, when she saw me the first time, I actually fell on my knees and I cried so much because I started being unhappy at some point.
But did she say to you, well, you deserve this? You ran away from home.
She hugged me and she said, do you want a pie?
Oh, man.
Do you want a pie? Because she could see that, you know what, my trip from Joburg, I didn't even want them to take me back home. I just asked them to take me to the taxis. So I went to the taxi. I took a taxi back home.
And all the way to?
All the way to Polokwane. And then I went to school. I finished my grade 10. And then I met Mr. Silalo. Went to UC 222.
You ended up marrying Silalo.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
No,
we
no,
were
no.
not married. No, we were not married. We just had
you
children.
Weren't married.
No.
But
no.
you had kids together.
We had kids together. Yes. Beautiful kids.
Okay. So there's a lot of, I mean, this is the most incredible
yeah,
like nexus
oh
of careers. So there's Brenda, there's Silalo, there are all these amazing people
yeah.
who've really, along with you, made South African music what it is.
Yeah.
But you end up going after school to Cape Town.
Yes. Cape Town had to happen because I wanted to study jazz. And at the time, Wits University was not offering jazz. And I went to University of Cape Town. When I got there in the first year, I got put under so much pressure because my professor believed in me so much.
Okay, but this is 1994.
1994.
This was the year that we first all went to vote.
Yes.
And you were 18. So it would have been the first time you voted as well. You voted
yes.
in Cape Town?
Yes, I did. Cape Town
year.
Was my home.
What a year though. I mean,
yes.
you're studying jazz at UCT. Which
everything
is,
changed.
Everything.
I was not the same. And I was not even liked. I was one of the least liked person at varsity.
Why?
They didn't like my hair. They didn't like my nose. They didn't like
the
color
kids?
Of my skin. Even the black kids. It was so sad, you know, because I was a loner. If I was not with Silalo, I was in my class, you know, I couldn't, I was not comfortable at all. You know what changed my life? My gift. because I went up with the big band and I sang this very song, How High the Moon. And after that day, I was the most liked girl by every band in Cape Town, by everyone. I was the most talked about. And then we formed this band together with Jimmy Lulu. Oh my goodness. Then I was the most pretty girl in Cape
and
Town.
And suddenly everyone wants
suddenly,
to be your friend, right?
I'm like, oh yes. But I was, you know, I forgot all about that.
People
so
are
I became
so full of it, aren't they?
I promise you. It was so sad that, you know, that, so I'm observant to stuff like that and the bullying and the stuff. I'm very, very sensitive to it and I see it from far. And having kids, you know what, you see it in my, you see it in what they post on, even if they're going to post it on their profile picture on WhatsApp or something like that, you see, ah, there's something up with this child, or how a child would be reserved at
so
home.
So you're sensitive to that because you went through it?
Because I went through it and I don't want anybody going through it. It's not nice. It's not nice at all. Everybody wants a sense of belonging. Everybody deserves to have that feeling
that
I belong.
I'm amazed. I mean, before you became famous and before everybody in Cape Town kind of knew who you were when you were performing with your band, I'm surprised the people were horrible, though.
They were.
Because you don't strike me as a cold, nasty...
No. I was quiet. Maybe
So just by being quiet, you were victimized.
Yeah, I was very quiet.
Because, you know, usually it's because someone is just bitter and nasty and angry. But you weren't any of those things.
No, I wasn't. I was really most of the time by myself. And then I met a friend who was just in the same pot as me. And we became best friends until today. And now she's a teacher in Cape Town. Every time I mean, every time when I go there, we talk. And we actually laugh about this stuff. And we.
What's her name?
Cindy.
Cindy, what is she? What, she teaches at primary school, or
she teaches? Well, she was at varsity at UCT. She was teaching at UCT, and now she does other stuff with for the government. As
Well.
Yeah, she's really.
It's nice that you're still friends because sometimes
she's looking
when,
for a boyfriend, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll help her find one. Yeah,
somebody find my boyfriend, Cindy. My boyfriend, a boyfriend.
But it is cool that you're still friends with her because sometimes when you become. You know, a well-known person and you do as well as you've done, you tend to kind of have to leave people behind.
I'm very good with relationships and friendships. Then I keep people, even in Cape Town. When I go to Cape Town, I always say Cape Town is my, Cape Town used to be my first home until I realized that actually my first home is where I was born. So, and Cape Town is my second home, you know, after Joburg.
Do you still go back to Polokwane every now and then?
My mom will, I have to. She's still there. She's here now, you know. She comes here now and then because she hasn't been feeling well. But she's here. She's in Polokwane. We see her Christmas. We have to. Easter, she has to come this side. So we're trying to, you know, we juggle.
How's that traffic from Polokwane
I don't
over this
do,
weekend?
I do not
Easter,
do. I don't
stay
even
away.
Look that direction. I don't go that direction.
Apparently, last night, the queues of cars were so bad that they reckoned people only would get home by 4 o'clock this morning.
I don't blame them. I believe. I would have. Either you must leave, go visit home a week before Easter, or come back way. When they arrive, you come back. So you have to work against that traffic.
Now, I'm interested in how things developed from there on because you did. You had personal relationships that kind of happened at the same time. You had your career taking off.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been. Because a lot of people look back on other people's careers, especially those of us who are fans of yours. And, you know, we look at we say, oh, it looks like it was a smooth path. It's never like that, though,
no,
right?
No, it can't be. It should not be a smooth path. You know why it should not be? Because you have to be matured enough to know that it has to come with those challenges. And those challenges are the ones, if you are smart and you've got a vision for who you want and for what you want for yourself, those things will strengthen you so much. For the good, for your good. So that's what happened to me. The challenges that came, I mean, it came to a point where on even in Joburg, when I came to, I was afraid because I signed a contract with Sony and I stayed for 3 years without, you know, releasing.
Now these contracts, I mean, they used to be really, really bad because the record company could do whatever they wanted.
Right.
And you don't know what you're signing some of the time. Most people don't know to get in their own lawyer. To have their own representation.
Until today, actually. A lot of musicians, they sign and they think that belonging to a recording label is a good thing. It becomes a good thing if you know what you're getting yourself into. But I believe that, I mean, A Cry, Smile and a Dance sold so many CDs.
Yeah.
And if I was living anywhere else in the world, signed an international contract, I would have possibly had a house in the sky, you know, hanging
right
there. People would have to, to teleport to my house or something like that. But it's not like that. And we should not fool people. When you sign with a recording company, you have to work hard. You have to work twice as
hard.
They
own you.
They own you. And you know what? The saddest part about it is that after, if you decide, because when I decided to actually, I mean, I had wonderful years at Sony. And, but those years are the years that actually made me learn, you know, how to become better. Because if I had stayed there for one more year, there was nothing else that I was going to give them. I had nothing else for them, but I had a lot for myself. I had to get out to actually grow even more. And I think at that point, having studied and having spoken to so many great musicians who have been there before you, it has to open up something in your mind, you know, in your heart. You gotta be hungry for this thing, because there's more to music than just being in one place for so long.
By the way, did Brenda ever see your success?
She did, by the way, but the only thing she could say was to beat me up about how many kids I had, you know. Why must you have so many kids, you know, such a beautiful singer? Why? Every time, I remember twice, I opened up for, I performed before her. And before she went on, she comes, and I love this woman, you know, but she's got too many kids. You know, that's what she would say all the time.
Because you had three kids with Silaila, right?
I had three kids. I have three kids with Silaila,
And you must have had them when you were pretty young as well.
I was 17. I was speaking to these young girls the other day. I mean, that was such a, I believe, you know, God puts some of us into the situations, you know, for the betterment of other people, you know, so we can advise other people, because I think I'm a vessel. I think I should be able to, right now, if I'm going to tell a teenager, don't do it, they should be able to listen, because I know better. I was there.
You've experienced it.
I've experienced it, and I lived it, and I know how hard it was to raise young kids, you know, when you are young. I don't know what it's like to be a teenager. I have no idea.
No, because you were immediately a mother.
I was immediately a mother. So, you know, I had to actually, when my daughter, who's older now, she's 25. She's actually turning 26 this year, is it? Yes, she is. You know, when she at about 15 or something, when she was going through this moment of discovering boys and blah, 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 blah. And
you were like, stay away!
You know,
get away from the boys!
I was like, give me a gun! Somebody let me shoot this child! I remember I called Slala. I said, come take her! I don't know.
Cause you could see it all repeating itself.
Yes.
Right?
And she knew, because me, I'm an extrovert. My kids know. Sex, we talk everything. We talk about it, you know, and, you know.
That's so good, because I know so many parents who don't.
No, I do that with my kids. If I tell you the stuff that my 15-year-old daughter now, she's 15, she wants to, this morning, oh, she's so smart, that girl. She actually messed me up this morning. Firstly, she says to me, my daughter was heavy, the oldest one, she's married now. Okay. She was saying that, you know what, this 15-year-old was saying to the older one and me that, I don't know why you guys do this. You know, because I laughed just like that after. She said, I don't know why you guys do this. You know, Ma, I'm never going to mess up my vagina. Never. I'm never going to mess up
my
vagina.
Sounds like a smart kid.
Yeah. And now she's talking journalism. She wants to go live for a year in London. That's her mind. That's where she is now. You know, she's a bookworm. I thought she was bored, because every time when you're watching TV, she's like, okay, I need to read this book. You know, she's like that.
Wow.
Her teacher sent me a message the other day, said that, you know what, I'm so proud of your daughter, because
smart,
it's very
kid.
Rare to see kids reading. Yeah. She reads, she wants to do something about books, and I'm supposed to find the stuff. I don't know much about where to go, but she's actually getting it together for herself. She gave me a number this morning to call somebody.
You know, isn't that cool? Because that's also one of the things that we're starting to see more and more. And it's something that's difficult for some parents to deal with. I mean, look, you've had this incredible career, and you've maybe had access to a lot of things that many other parents don't. But a lot of black parents in this country struggle with the fact that their kids are so hungry for knowledge and so hungry for stuff, and they can't always provide it, because they don't know the first thing about where to get it for themselves.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
It must be, in some ways, it must make them feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it does.
Sometimes even ashamed that they can't help their own kids.
Their parents, they will feel like that. I remember today, my son, he's 3, and he didn't want to go to school because it was holidays. And why don't you want to go to school? Because I want to watch TV. And he's 3. And I said, okay. You know, you calm him down, and you try to charm him a little bit. And then I said to my helper, no more TV for him for a while. We need to tell him the TV is broken.
Okay.
So that he stays, because
that's
now
smart.
If even with an iPad, if he cries for it, I'm like, oh, baby, it's so broken. I have to go fix it. He understands that it's broken and there's nothing we can do. It doesn't come. So we just have to switch off the plug at the
back. That's clever of you. Yeah. So you know supply and demand.
Yes.
And you know when the demand needs to be cut down.
Oh, let me tell you, with all these kids, you become smart. They can never outsmart me. I keep telling them I'm smarter than you. So.
But so you've got three with Celilo, and then you've got two others.
I got two.
These are your two babies now.
Yes.
But I know that you have had a very public kind of battle with weight over your life.
Yes.
Now, this is something that I think you could be very proud of. You go for a run often.
Yeah.
You said you're up at 5 a.m.
Yes.
today and every other day. So it's
every
not a problem.
Every single day, actually. Yeah.
It's not a problem for you to be awake.
No. My alarm rings at 4:30 daily. Whether I'm tired
even on
or
weekends,
not, even on weekends, except on a, except on a Sunday, Saturday it has to ring at it come because Saturdays I start at 6 o'clock instead of 5.
Yeah,
I give myself that hour. I always say that if I can have that discipline of staying in gym, just I just need 2 hours or 3 hours, then I can do whatever I want. I can sleep the whole day, but let me have done that. Because Sunday I lead praise and worship in church, so I have to be in church.
This is important, I think, for a lot of people to realize too, is that you don't have a, you know, as a singer, as an artist, you don't have a set schedule every day.
No.
Some days you're in the studio recording from morning until night. Sometimes you don't even eat because you're so busy in the studio.
And sometimes you're flying at that time.
Some days you're flying. Some days you're performing.
Yeah.
There's no set Monday to Friday for you.
No, so I don't even have a holiday.
So you have to have certain things that keep you grounded. Otherwise, you could lie around until 12 every day.
And be lazy.
And many artists do.
And our career doesn't allow us to not look a certain way.
Yeah. If you were a big fat mess, then I don't know.
Nobody would listen to me. I need to always be an inspiration for me first.
But I'm so pleased you said that because some people say, oh, no, but it doesn't matter. They say, oh, look at Aretha Franklin. But, you know,
there's
one Aretha Franklin.
There's one.
You know, for any artist who's starting out, it does matter what you look like.
It is so important because you know what? I'll tell you, there's nothing as beautiful as slipping into a dress, however long or however short, and you look so elegant in there and you look comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do a 2-hour show without feeling like I'm so tired. And you know you're not going to have a heart attack on that stage.
This
you know.
Is good too. And I wish that more artists would appreciate this fact. If you're not fit and you're not in good shape and you're not a healthy person, you can't stand up there for 2 hours and do a good show.
No.
You run out of steam.
You do run out of steam. And the worst thing is for you to stand up on stage. Remember, when you're on stage, you have to remain in character because you are for the people. Whether you like it or not, you chose a career that is demanding of you, and people demand things from you.
So you're having the worst day ever, or you're tired and you're exhausted, your kids kept you up all night.
Yeah.
Not their problem.
No.
The audience don't care.
It's got nothing to do with them. You want them to buy your CD, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want them to go say nice things about you on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. Mm-hmm. So give them the truth. Give them who you are. Let them, give them love. Give them the hard work you've been putting in. I mean, that's why I don't believe in, there's a way. You gotta strategize in anything you do. You know, if you are tired like that, don't take it to the people. Don't let them see it. And if you happen to be in that hill for 2 hours and in the last hour and a half you are exhausted, find a nice way of taking that hill off. Don't just say, I'm in Ankatel. I'm tired now. I'm, you know, no. And avoid. I don't believe in sweating too much on stage that it looks really terrible. Have it. Because my pores are so open right now. After one song, I'm like, I'm dripping. So I always have a towel. I always have. And then if it means that 5 seconds, I can go backstage and do something.
Freshen up. Yeah, right.
It's important.
Because you're on show.
Listen, have you ever seen Beyonce sweating? She's got 10 fans in front of her. Firstly, okay, fine, right? But she knows that if I don't do this, I'm going to. And I'll give her as an example because.
And people would love to have a picture of her looking like a big, sweaty, fat mess.
Yeah.
Because they would put it all over the tabloids,
exactly,
right?
And say something not good, you know. So don't give people something to say about you that is not good to a point that it's going to actually, you know, depress you and it's going to kill your creativity.
Do you ever get like that?
I used to get like that. So now I make sure, like now we the preparation stage, I call it the therapy stage as well, because sitting down with my musical director and saying, okay, what are we going to do here? What are we doing there? Or he comes and he says, this is what I have for this song. And I'm like, I don't like that. I don't think this is going to, I'm so involved with my music. Guys, singers, let me urge you, be involved with your music. Don't let somebody come and tell you.
And you just pitch up and
don't
sing.
Don't just pitch up and sing. You will never grow, firstly. You know, and you must know when you're not doing good enough for yourself. You need to know. Because when you are not good in doing good enough, you're not going to give the people nothing. And they will know.
Who wrote A Cry, Smile, and Dance?
Sly Lo. You know that
beautiful
name.
Beautiful song. Huh?
Beautiful song. Yeah.
What a song. That thing has gone all over the world.
It has. All over.
I mean, that's probably, that's your biggest.
It is my biggest,
hit,
yes.
Right.
It's my biggest album, and then New Beginnings, and then A Legacy, I think. A Legacy, because A Legacy had all the other songs, and then the rest are following.
Do you ever, when you perform that song, go, I don't want to do this one again, even though you know the audience love it? Because I listened to an interview once with Billy Joel, who I love, and he said he just hates singing Piano Man now because he's so tired of it, and there's so much expectation around that song. This is your big song.
That's your song. Listen,
but at the same time, it's love and hate because you're sick of it, right?
I'm so tired of it. But let me tell you something. I sat with Oletta Adams, and Oletta said to me,
she hates Window of Hope, doesn't she?
And Get Here.
Get Here. I don't care how you get here.
Get here. She hates that song because there is no way she can do a show anywhere in the world without singing that song. So I asked her, then how do you do it?
Yeah.
And she says she doesn't have a choice. She has to do it. And for some reason, I'll tell you, with me, with A Cry, Smile, and Dance, I don't have to like that song anymore. I love it, but I don't like it, you know, because people make me sing it over and over again. But every time when we do it, how do I make it interesting for me? I just change it. I keep the theme what it is. I keep the song.
But you very one little thing here.
Just one little thing. You know what?
There.
Please, audience, let me do it for me. Please, I need to also enjoy this song, you know, so just a little bit here. But
because if you're not having fun, they won't have
fun. They won't have fun. So, but this one. One thing I know is that you cannot take the song away from the people. Whether you like it or not, it is their song. Even if you are finished with the show, okay, not when you're finished with the show, because then that's it. When
it's
we're done,
done
we've
you,
given you one encore, please,
there,
I'm
right.
going,
right.
come to the next show.
Right.
You know, but if at that point you're saying, you know what, A Cry, Smile, and Dance, I will give it to you. It's always in the program, but I think I remember one show where I forgot it, and it was the best show of my life. Oh, my God. I was like, yes. And the band said, we didn't do A Cry. I'm like, how did we miss that song? How did we
but
miss it?
But you were thrilled, secretly.
I was so happy because the audience was happy, and nobody even noticed, you know?
Oh, wow.
I'm like, let me tell you, we sing. I believe in singers singing, guys. Sing. Open those pipes. You got to sing.
Now, Sly Lo has been such an important part of your life. I mean, he continues to be. He's the father of your children.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that. There's all of that, that you guys will always be friends.
Yeah.
It's amazing to see also that you can end a relationship and continue a friendship.
Yes.
Because some people think that's impossible.
They don't. Yeah. Yeah. And some people think that maybe we don't talk, me and him. He only gets hard when if I call and say, you know, your son. When I say your son, he knows he's not my son. At that point, he's your son, so you deal with him. You know? So then the Sly Lo part comes out, you know, and he's like, what did you do? Okay, I'll call him. You know, but otherwise, you know, he's there. He speaks to the kids. He's, you know, the kids visit him. We talk about music. I actually, you know what? I need to actually ask that man to do a show with me.
That would be very special.
Yeah, no, I really think it's about time. I mean, we couldn't do it before, you know, because of other reasons. But I think we've matured people now. We're grown-ups. And
people
need it.
People would love that,
They
though,
would really you know? Love it. But I want to produce him, actually. I think he needs to let me be his producer for his next album.
You think he would do that?
He would allow me.
Well, there's nobody who knows him better, right?
Yeah, if he knows the kind of talent he has, he will allow me to produce him.
And musically, you've got to be the person who knows him the best.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I understand him. There we go.
Are there ever situations where Simpiwe got jealous because of your relationship with Sly Lo, just because of the music that binds you together and the kids and everything else?
Yeah, you know, at that moment will be there. It used to be there. But I think, and that was in the beginning, you know, whereon why are you doing this show? Why are you doing that? You know, there has to be boundaries. You got to draw a line. You have to understand that if I'm married to someone else, if he comes and he says, listen, I can see this is not going to go this right, you have to at least be matured enough to hear him out.
Mm.
Otherwise, then there's going to be that issue, that tension, and you don't want that. So I've always been the smart one between the two of them. I've always been the smart one to say, okay, fine, this is going
Let's talk about this.
Let's not take it this way, you know. But I think now, you know, we're all really matured people now. We're grown up. We're getting old. Listen, we're getting gray hairs and stuff. We keep putting color on the gray hair, but we can't hide it, so... let's do something good with this music. Music is such a beautiful thing. It needs to be shared.
What's your favorite thing about performing? What's the best thing? Is it when you come out on that stage and...
I was about to say that.
The first moment?
Yeah,
right?
God, yeah.
Well, don't let me interrupt you. Tell me.
The first moment. Firstly, I know what I look like, right? So when I go out, I'm not sure right now if they're clapping because, oh, she looks so good, or, oh, wow, we're going to get good music. So now it's actually more interesting. So I'm curious. So I'm going to ask them this Friday, okay, what was that about? Is it about the look or is it about the music that's coming? But one thing I know is that it is because of the love. That one, you can't take it away from anyone. The love that I receive from my fans and the audience, it's from South Africa, from the world. It is amazing. But more so here at home, when I walk out and they clap hands, I know that that is love. And they know that it's about to go down.
It must be a very powerful feeling. I mean, you kind of have the audience in the palm of your hand at that moment. Has it ever gone really wrong for you?
Oh, let me think. Yes. Yes. Yes,
how,
it has.
How badly? I mean, what's the worst case scenario, and have you lived through it?
It was actually, I have never actually had a worst case scenario, unless if I had a running tummy. I don't know. I would find a way of handling that even, but.
It'd be like, excuse me, I'll be back.
I'll be back now.
I'm coming right back.
But, you know, I think the worst case scenario was when I had laryngitis and I didn't know that I had it. And I promise
you could have done some serious damage to your voice.
Yeah.
Right.
And, but the thing is, I really could have.
Yeah.
I went on singing and I kept on thinking, why is this voice not coming out? You know, and I kept on pushing and pushing and pushing. And by the second show, and we had two shows, by the second show, all I did was just to pray for grace. And I happened to actually carry the show through, but I was so sore that I begged for an ENT specialist to see me on that very same day. And when I got there, they said one of my vocal cords was actually red. One of them, the one on the right.
Would have been permanent damage if you carried on.
Permanent damage, yes. And then they put me on medication, serious medications. And remember also, we don't understand one thing. That if you're a singer and when you have kids and they do an anesthetic and they put that gas in, they pump it into your system for a while to keep you under, that affects your voice.
Really?
Greatly. Greatly.
The nitrous oxide.
It affects your voice in such a very bad way. Very bad way.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Are you fearful of your voice being damaged? You're losing your voice? Does it bother you? Are you preoccupied with it? Do you have insurance and all that sort of thing?
I don't have insurance for it, but it worries me that one day something will happen, and it'll happen because of my ignorance. That's the only way it'll happen. So since I had that laryngitis problem, I kind of like, I'm sensitive now to it. And that is why I'm going back to, you know, getting vocal training again.
Right.
Not because anything is happening now.
And you don't smoke or anything?
No, I don't. I don't smoke. I've never smoked, no.
I never understand singers who smoke.
No, I don't get them as well. But they'll see you one day. I mean, it'll...
I mean, you would think... That's your instrument. That's
yeah,
your most important attribute. You've got to look after that, right?
Listen, I think one of my kids asked me that, the very same question you're asking me a couple of days ago. And funny enough, lately, that's what I've been saying. I've been saying, no, I need to go back to taking vocal lessons again. You can never stop, because every time when we sing, one thing I'm aware of is if I don't warm up, And my songs, they're demanding. So from the beginning of the song, I have to be warmed up. If I'm not warmed up, it's going to start cracking by the fourth song.
Sure.
It starts cracking. So when that started happening, I was like, okay, why is this happening? Why is this? So go get help. Go figure out what's going on. You don't want to eventually one day, a year later or 2 years later, you hear that you can't sing anymore. So I'm very careful about that. Check your vocal cords all the time. ENT specialists are really, really, they help.
Are you also nervous about going to places where you have to shout and you try not to strain your voice?
Yeah.
Like now, if we spoke, you know, we've been talking for almost an hour. Are you concerned that you might be, you know, putting a strain on your voice?
No, this is perfect. This is basically like a warm-up, like a very mild warm-up. After this, I could do a two-hour show. I'll be perfect.
Hmm.
Yeah. The vocal cords, they vibrate more when you sing higher. So imagine they are vibrating and you have not warmed them up. So you need to actually warm them up a little bit, and then so that when they vibrate, they're not breaking any vein. They are ready. That vein is ready to stretch. I mean, I had a professional vocal teacher for about 4 or 5 years, and classically.
Did you actually manage to expand your range?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Could?
Amazingly so. Yeah. By the third year, this woman pushed me. By the third year, she told me, okay, now we're getting somewhere.
Wow. I'm like, you must have really held out there, because you must have been thinking for the first year and a half,
please,
there's nothing happening.
I was almost quitting.
Yeah.
And I knew that jazz vocal lessons would never get me what I should get, what I could get if I was doing
Is this like an opera
yeah.
teacher? Wow. Did you have to do those scales nonstop?
Oh, no. Even now, when I warm up, that's all I do. Yeah, and there's a technique for it, and all those things they protect. They give you long life.
Right, longevity.
Longevity, that's the right word. Longevity on your vocal cords, on your gift. You know, so we need to keep checking. You need to do exercises. You need to warm up, singers. It's important. You need to warm up. We have to warm up.
You hear that, Sia? Don't mess around.
That's what I'll start doing in the morning now.
No, you're always breaking out into song.
Sia thinks he's a singer.
One day I'll be recognized as the new Pavarotti.
Oh, please. Yes, I agree.
Just throwing it out there.
Definitely.
Well, Judith, amazingly, I didn't want this to happen. We've run out of time.
Oh, man.
Which irritates me, because we didn't even get to some of the things I wanted to talk to you about. But you have to come back and visit again.
I have to.
You really are a very, very special part of what makes this country an artistic and a musical treasure trove.
Thank you.
And I hope that you have many more successful milestones on your career, because so far it's been an incredible story.
Thank
really
you
has.
So much.
Yeah. You make everybody smile and laugh and dance and sing
dance,
and cry.
Yeah, thank you.
All
so
of those.
Much.
I mean, I have to play that song. You know that.
Yeah,
now.
I know. You love it. I know you love it.
When, of course I do. But when you talk about it so much, then there's also an expectation.
Of course. So give it to them.
So new stuff that we can look forward to?
Yes. One Word. One Word is a beautiful album. It's out. It's funky. It's jazz. It's all elements of everything in one. I'm singing in Lingala, in Portuguese, in Sepedi, and in Zulu. So you got to go out there. And this is what I call growth, people. So you need to get out there.
Portuguese?
Yes. You got to go get this album and listen to it. Some of the songs we're going to be playing this weekend on Friday. And they're going to, every time when we've been playing these songs, the new songs, we can. And I have a reggae song as well. And it's very sexy. I have a song called Satisfy.
Beautiful.
As you can hear the tone of voice. So
love it.
Yes.
And when you're performing, that we can come and see you?
This Friday, but at Betchwood Hotel, but unfortunately, I think the tickets are already gone.
Oh.
And then,
it's hard to be so popular.
Please. You know what? And I'm performing with Karabo, funny enough. You know, I'm performing with Karabo. He's doing a set and I'm doing a set. And
very
then
nice.
We're going to work something out. So if people can still call maybe and check if there's still tickets.
You like doing collaborations.
I love
you're not afraid of collaborations.
I love collaboration. I love showing off my voice, because you know what? I love my voice so much. And I think when paired with somebody good or somebody who's going to challenge me, I can do great things. I'm all about getting out of my comfort zone. You know, the last show I did at Carnival City, I sang with a couple of months ago with Jonathan Butler and Oleta Adams.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you, there was something happened inside me fire.
That's
it was
a hell of
so
a lineup.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Jonathan Butler and Aletta Adams and Judith Sapuma. I mean, that's wow.
Oh, those are little things.
I mean, it is at Carnival City, but you know.
Those are little things.
We can overlook that.
Judith, thank you so much
you
for
so
coming
much,
to speak
Garrett,
to us
for
this
having
morning.
Me. Thank you.
Pleasure. Lovely to see you again. Judith Sapuma, everybody. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. We're back into the working week. We've got to get this country going. I mean, we've got all these public holidays.
You've
got to do some work now. Here it is. the famous song that we've been speaking about all morning, Judith Sepuma. A cry, a smile, a dance, and thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. CliffCentral.com.